Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flair out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for an inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I am one of your hosts, Eric Cole. You may recognize me from my work on the site formerly known as Talking Chop, but is now known as Battery Power. Before I will go any further, I just want to make it clear to everybody, you do not have to change anything about your podcast feeds, your subscriptions, or anything like that. As some of you are probably already aware, we did just make that change on the site, but we've made all those changes on the back end. So if you were subscribed to the Talking Chop podcast feed, you are still subscribed. You will not miss a single episode of this podcast or their flagship program, which is now going to be the Battery Power flagship program hosted by Brad, and then the Daily Hammer hosted by Sean. Nothing else changes. The content remains the same. We're just going to be the same sort of stuff, just under a different name, and we're going to hope to continue to give you some great content. And with that in mind, this is normally the part where I introduce our normal co-host, Garrett Spain, who's been around with me for quite some time, but instead, I have a special co-host today, 2021 draft pick for the Atlanta Braves, Spencer Schwellenbach, is joining me to talk with me about some baseball, what's been going on with him, because he's had a pretty eventful last 12 months or so. Spencer, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I was talking to Spencer a little bit beforehand. I felt pretty awful that I had put some sort of curse on him because I did an interview with him right before he went down with injury. Hopefully, we're going to try to flip the script a little bit, and he's going to be back on the mound in what, April, May, or something like that. We'll see if we can change that around a little bit.
So we're
going to kind of be doing a little bit of a redo of an interview that Spencer and I did have, but we're also going to be going over some things that happened more recently. And so, Spencer, just for those who kind of to help our listeners get to know you a little bit better, when did you start playing baseball, and like, did you play on any other sports growing up?
Yeah, so I started playing T-ball at the age of four, and then, you know, my older brothers and then my older sister all played baseball growing up, so I was always at the ball field watching them. My dad was always the coach, so got to sit in on the dugout with them and, you know, just learn baseball, and that's kind of how I fell in love with it.
So it's always an interesting thing with me when I talk to the guys, especially guys who are, like, drafted particularly highly. Is like, there's always a point when they realize that they're not like just enjoying baseball. Like, you're one of the best players on the team. And then you start realizing, maybe I'm not just the best player on the team, I'm one of the best players that I know of in my area. But when was it for you when you realized that it wasn't just like, hey, I'm like the team captain type. I'm actually like a guy who could realistically play professional baseball.
I'd say when I was 11 years old, I pitched against the Motor City Hit Dogs, who later became my travel baseball team, at a tournament. It was a super NIT, if you win the tournament, you go to Disney and you play for the Elite 32 World Series. And my team was 0-2, and we were eliminated already, but it was still pool play. And my dad was like, you know what, this is a top five team in the country wants you to pitch against them. So I pitched five innings and did really well. And then after the game, the coach came up to my dad and was like, hey, we really liked the guy on the mound. Like, who is that? And we really want him on our team next year. And he's like, oh, that's my son. And tried out for the team the following year, which was based out of Detroit. I was playing on a team locally in my hometown, Saginaw, Michigan. And I played with them from when I was 12 years old until I was 18. And honestly, when I was 12 years old on that team, I felt like, man, I'm playing on one of the best teams in the country, and I am one of our top players, and give us a chance to win in the field and on the mound. And, you know, that's where I kind of gained that pitcher shortstop mentality, and that's what took me into high school and college. And now I'm a pitcher, but I feel like going through that organization and, you know, starting to play for them, I really understood that, you know, baseball is fun, but like, it's, I want it to be my job. So, and that's kind of where we are now.
So let's talk about this for a second. Your dad had to give you up from his team to let you go on the travel ball team. What?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there had to have been some negotiations in that, right? I mean,
yeah, for sure. I mean, and I wasn't all like, oh my gosh, yes, I want to play for this team, because I had all my friends, you know, on my team that were, sure, went to my school, and, you know, they're my friends. So, and we had a conversation, my mom, my whole family, honestly, and we're like, we want to put you in the best, you know, opportunity, situation for you to succeed and, you know, fulfill your dreams of being a college baseball player and a professional baseball player. And, you know, it was very hard for me as a 12-year-old kid to go on a team with guys who had been playing together for 4 years already. And being the new guy, it was, like, really tough at first. But, you know, everyone was really awesome. The coaching staff was awesome, and they welcomed me in. And, yeah, honestly, I never really thought about that, like, my dad having to give me up from the team and all, but –
says a lot about him too, you know, like, he's, yeah, like, hey, you know, if, like, this is the team that I'm coaching, you should be on that other team. I mean, you know, he was definitely looking out for you, and obviously it seems to have worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk, we move forward a little bit, and that is the choice about college, mm-hmm, because you decided to go to the Nebraska as opposed to staying in programs that might have been a little bit closer to you, like with Michigan State, Michigan, or even maybe one of the smaller programs there, or even going to a different national program altogether. Mm-hmm. What made you decide that Nebraska was the right fit for you as opposed to maybe some of those other options?
Yeah, so first off, I want to say that my parents are from Wisconsin, and I grew up a big Wisconsin Badger fan, and they don't have a baseball team.
Oh, I see.
I grew up kind of not really a fan of Michigan or Michigan State. So when I would go on my visits there, I wasn't like totally in love with it, and it was like completely open. Like, some people have their dream school. I didn't really have one. And I started talking to Nebraska at the beginning of my sophomore year of high school, and Darren Erstead was the coach, and I came on a visit there. And I wasn't even going to call them, because Nebraska, like, that's so far away. I don't know if I want to go that far away from home. And one of my brother's best friends played at Michigan State and said when they played at Nebraska, the facilities, the fan base was incredible, and I had to go on a visit. And so I did. And when I went, I was totally in awe about everything, like the baseball field, the facilities, the coaching staff. Like, we had lunch and we didn't even talk about baseball, not one time. And every other program that I visited, it was strictly baseball. You know, there was some things like, oh, how's your family? Like, tell me about yourself. But Darren Erstead was the man. And that is one of the biggest reasons I went there, was because of him. Great professional baseball player, and, you know, played at Nebraska and loves that university more than anybody. And I put my trust in him and the other coaches and decided to commit there as a shortstop and pitcher. There was a lot of other schools looking at me as strictly a pitcher, but at that time I was thinking like I really like shortstop and I really like pitching. I don't really want to make up my mind right now. And I also want to play. Like I don't want to go to a top program and be, you know, not playing until my junior year. Like that's, you'd be playing against really good competition and practice and everything, but I wanted to play in games and get the experience that way. So that's kind of why I chose Nebraska, and that's the best decision I've ever made, honestly.
Absolutely. I'm going to be enjoying this later on because you probably have no idea, but the host of our flagship program, Brad Rowland, is a diehard Michigan fan. So I'm going to be making sure that I'm like, hey, just so you know, we got someone who's a big Wisconsin Badger who's not going to have any of this, any of this Go Blue stuff. I dig it. He's as soon as Jesse Franklin was drafted by the Braves, he's like, well, that's my guy. Don't know. it's too good. So you end up going to Nebraska, perform really well there, playing in the field primarily. And then this past season, you start coming out of the bullpen. And again, you and I have talked a little bit about this, you know, kind of elsewhere, but I wanted to kind of get this kind of out there because this is a transition that I think that a lot of our listeners have a hard time wrapping their heads around as to kind of how that came about and why it ultimately resulted in what you're going to end up being playing in as a professional, at least to start. How did that change to like coming out of the bullpen? And was that like kind of a coach's decision where like maybe we need to try this out, or is that something that you were facilitating, or how did that happen?
Yeah. So, well, in high school, I played shortstop. We'd play doubleheaders. I'd play shortstop the first game, and then I would pitch the second game. I would start and pitch. And I really liked starting. I really liked having to be in control of the game, you know, from the first inning, from the first pitch. So, and then when I went to Nebraska, I threw a couple flat grounds and, you know, my arm just didn't feel right at the time. And the coaching staff just said, you know what, it's totally fine. We want you to play, you know, the infield, and we don't want to lose you for a whole season because we're forcing something on the mound. We want you to be able to play every day for us. And so I didn't throw another bullpen the rest of the year, didn't even think about pitching. And then so at the end of that season, I actually had a surgery on my arm. It was a UCL repair. So kind of just put a brace around my partially torn ligament that I had. And then my sophomore year, like, leading up into it, I threw a couple bullpens again because the intention was I'm going to pitch once my arm kind of gets better. And we had a new coaching staff that year. It was a coaching change, and they didn't really, I mean, they saw me at shortstop, and that's what they knew me as, like through videos and stuff.
Right.
And they were more interested in that. And so I kind of was just like, okay, like I don't have to go through, you know, the mound routine, the long toss routine. I just can do a position player, you know, rehab throwing, which only took me about 4 months to get back on the field instead of like 6 or 7. And so didn't really throw any bullpens that year. And then that was the COVID year that happened. So our season got cut short. And in the summer, that rest of the spring, I was at home and I had a hockey net in my backyard, and I tied some strings to the hockey net as like a strike zone. And I started throwing into it, started mixing up some pitches. And I was like, wow, like I feel really good. And everything like feels like I didn't skip a beat from high school. Like a fastball was there, slider was there, changeup was there. And every week would go out and throw, and then went to play summer ball. And I played about 20 games that summer, didn't pitch at all, just played shortstop. And throughout the whole summer, I was in conversation with Coach Bolt at Nebraska. And he said, like, we want to try you, you know, as a pitcher, whether that be, you know, a reliever or a closer or maybe a starter. And I said, yeah, I'd really like to try that out. So I got to school, threw two bullpens and everything felt really good. And then threw in a scrimmage against our own team and I did really well. And that was just the, you know, the thing. We would scrimmage Friday or Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And every Friday I would throw the last inning. So I wouldn't have to go play the field the next day or the next inning. So it's kind of like closer role. And I did really well. And at the end of the fall, they told me you're going to be our closer. And like, we don't want to start you because we really like you in the field. And we don't want anything to, you know, take away from the team that way. So that kind of led into the season and I was the closer. And then there was some instances where I threw 3, 4, 5 innings and there was questions asked to me if I wanted to start. And I just said, let's not change anything up. Our guys are doing really well. I can come out of the bullpen at any time, 5th inning, 6th inning, 7th inning. And I could do it 2 times on a weekend. And that's what I did. And that was the best thing for our team. And that's how we were so successful. We get to the later part of the innings and we had a really good bullpen. So, yeah.
It's such a wild, like your story kind of like of how you're making it to the pros is like, is really fascinating. And listen to Dana Brown talk about you too. He's like, he finally got his shortstop and he's going to convert to a pitcher and you know, all this other stuff. And that kind of brings me to like the Braves interest because clearly you were like following along with all the speculation out there. What's going to happen in the first round? What's going to happen in the second round? And you were mentioned with the Braves a lot in that, yeah. those pre-draft conversations. When did you realize that the Braves were really kind of keying in on you, particularly as a pitcher? And were you initially kind of hesitant to kind of be put in that pitcher role considering how much you had played in the field?
Early in the season, I was doing really well at the plate and in the field, and the Braves really liked me as a shortstop. And like halfway into the season when I started, you know, my velo was getting up there, my innings were kind of increasing a little bit. Dana called me, JD, my area scout, called me, you know, every week and told me like, hey, we want you on the mound. Like, we think you can start, you have the stuff to start. And that's what we see you as. And honestly, it took a lot out of me to not play the infield anymore. But I think it was the right decision for me. Just because if I put my full effort and, you know, I put everything into pitching, like who knows how good I can be, who knows how, you know, how far I can go. So that's kind of what made me realize like, hey, you might have to throw away the, you know, the infield glove and, you know, just be a pitcher. So.
Well, and hey, you know, again, at the end of the day, whatever gets you drafted into the pros, right? You know what I mean?
Like, yep.
The response that I most often get is, you know, like, look, if they want me to play catcher and I've never played it before, you know, sign me up. I'm in, you know,
absolutely.
You know, just put those pads on me as long as I get to wear the logo. Before we take a quick break, I do want to ask you like that the day like the draft's about to happen. Where did you think you were going to end up being picked? Did you have kind of an inclination or was there a lot of uncertainty? Like was there a few teams that were kind of in play in weird places or?
Yeah, my agent told me I would be getting picked anywhere from pick 16 to pick 59.
That's a range.
He said there's multiple teams that like you in the first round. And if they don't pick you, the first 15 or so teams in the second round aren't looking for a pitcher or aren't looking for a college arm or don't like you in the second round or whatever. But Braves picked at 59 and he said, you're not getting past them in the second round. So I didn't really, he said, don't expect to get picked in the first round because I don't want you to have any, you know, like, oh man, like, shoot. So watching the draft on Sunday, I had my family and friends, you know, over, and it was just kind of like a little celebration. Like I knew I wasn't, you know, going to go in the first round. Like there was a chance, but it wasn't like, a party to celebrate me getting picked in the first round, you know? So it was like a celebration, and I had a smile on my face the whole time. It was so much fun. And I'm glad that my family and friends can be there with me. And then what was it? The Monday I got a call from my agent and said, you're going to be a Brave. And I had a huge smile on my face and got a call from the Braves and heard my name on the TV. And it was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to know, like, I mean, it's hard for me to kind of put myself in that position, but it's nice to know that you have a floor, right? You're like, I'm not like, this isn't like, you know, like one of those like draft room nightmares where like, you know, like how far is he going to fall? It's just like, there are worse things than being a second rounder and going to one of the better young teams in baseball, right?
Yeah. You know?
Exactly. All right. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about kind of some less than ideal starts to his pro debut and kind of what his plans are for the future. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Spencer, this is where things kind of change a little bit from the last time you and I chatted. So you get drafted and you go down to Florida. It's time for workouts. Hey, let's see where everything's looking. Let's look at what the changeup looks like. Let's see how the fastball is looking. Let's see how we're feeling. And clearly something wasn't right. And, you know, you had talked about that you had that non-Tommy John UCL repair, that kind of that reinforcement surgery earlier on in your career. Let's talk about what happens down there at workouts. Like, was it just a sudden thing, or was it just kind of like a, you know, over the course of a few workouts, just things didn't feel right? Or, and like, was like, is like, did something actually like completely like blow out, or is it something that you just felt like you had to do to kind of stay ahead of it? What happened?
So throughout the season, I was going through some soreness, which was normal, I thought. And then just because my arm for the last, you know, my sophomore, freshman year, senior year in high school, I was always kind of like, yeah, my arm doesn't feel great. And I got the surgery my freshman year, and it was just never like, oh my gosh, like I don't feel any pain. Like I feel like I can just go throw the ball as hard as I can and be fine. I always had just a little something. And when it's nonstop for 3 years, I just thought it was just normal. It's going to be like that forever. Like it wasn't like my velo was dipping, or like after I pitched, I couldn't move my arm, but it was like just uncomfortable. And I threw at the MLB combine in June, and I felt really good. And that week after, it was kind of weird. Like my arm just didn't recover how it usually had, you know? So, and the teams knew that, like I had a PRP injection in December of last year and put that on my medical for all the teams. I didn't want to hide anything. So they all knew that there was some sort of issue. And I went to Atlanta after the draft to get my MRI and physical and everything, and I didn't hear anything like about my MRI. Like I just thought, oh, it must be okay. And so I started playing catch when I got to Florida, played catch 2 or 3 days, and then got on the mound through like an 85% bullpen. It was my first bullpen in probably 7 or 8 months besides the MLB combine, just because I didn't throw bullpens during the year, just because I had a lot of work in the infield to get done, a lot of hitting, and just recovery as well. So, and then 3 days after that first bullpen, I was told I needed to ramp it up a little bit. They wanted to send me out to, you know, Augusta. And I threw about 10 pitches, and I turned back and was like, how hard is that? Because that's as hard as I can throw the ball right now, and my arm is killing me. And he's like, that was like 83 miles an hour. And I was like, yeah, I gotta be done. And went into the training room, and I was like, I don't know what just happened, but I can't throw anymore. And then went to get my surgery, and they pulled up my MRIs, and they said my ligament was hanging on by like one or two fibers at the top. Like, it was going to go at any second, but it was too painful for me to throw. So got that done. And the surgery I got was Tommy John with an internal brace, which I am not throwing yet. It takes 8 months after the surgery to start throwing, because I had that previous surgery my freshman year. So they wanted to be super cautious with that and make sure that when I come back, everything is nice and intact and ready to go.
Yeah, whenever I had talked a little bit to some guys about the specific repair you just had, that they're like, you know, yeah, he might be, you know, throwing him back on the mound in this coming summer. I'm like, are we sure? Yeah. I mean, hey, I'm all science, medicine, and technology is amazing, and I'm, you know, and it just seems like, you know, you're a young guy. I mean, I have told the story to a few people. I like literally the other day, I rolled my ankle. And I was like literally just fishing, and like I can't imagine like doing anything for like the next 3 weeks. And you know, when they're talking about like the types of repairs that you're just had to go under, and you're just gonna be popping back out there. And I was like, I must be getting old. That was the less fun part of the conversation. I want to talk about like you're recovering now. How are you feeling now? Like what is that process like? Coming, like you have the repair. Haven't started throwing yet. What are the things that they kind of you have to do to kind of get ready to start, you know, cranking up to being a pitcher again?
Yeah, so I'm about 6.5 months post-surgery, and I feel as good as I ever have right now. So and I'm doing everything in the weight room, can do full weight with my arms. My rehab is a bunch of, you know, repeating the movements of the shoulder, the forearm, getting stronger, you know, in the back of my shoulder, front of my shoulder, just so everything is going to be intact when I get ready to throw. I just started doing two-hand plyos, which is imitating throwing, and some overhead stuff, and, you know, just getting myself and my arm ready to be able to throw a ball again. And I feel like everything has gone really smoothly. There's been no setbacks. There's been, you know, I am super thankful and helped and blessed that, you know, I'm feeling as good as I am. And, you know, I know there's people that they get surgery and they still kind of feel a little off, and I'm super thankful that I'm feeling good.
And you must be drinking plenty of milk to kind of be able to recover like that. So like right when you kind of get your arm out of that sling, are the stretches the worst? I've heard the stretches are just the absolute worst, because you've been kind of like, kind of, you know, like once of those first few times of trying to stretch your arm out all the way are just brutal.
Yeah. So what we would do every single day, after about 2 weeks of having surgery, we would take my brace off and I would get my arm stretched, and man, that you feel like your arm just can't go any farther.
It's like, yep. I've heard
it's
that.
Like not even close to being extended. So I got a huge thank you to my, you know, trainers here and physical therapists. Like they're amazing. And without them, I don't know where I would be, honestly. They're so great.
Yeah, I think I was talking to Patrick Weigel, and he said like the first time they started trying, like they're like literally having the wrench on his arm, and he's like fighting him. He's like, "No, my arm will not go any further. Yeah. Don't stop cranking on me," you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't know if you know Patrick. That's a big dude. So if he doesn't want you to do something, you know, you might want to be careful about what you're trying to force him to do. He's a big, strong dude. So we're just gonna assume, right? And we have no reason to believe otherwise. Is that Tommy John's good? Your rehab's going great. We have no setbacks. You are going to be the guy with less pain, fully healthy, ready to go. For Absolutely. You, assuming we assume all that, for you, what do you think is the biggest challenge for you converting from the player you were in college, which was full-time in the field, coming out of the bullpen, to becoming a full-time starting pitcher in professional baseball? What do you see as the biggest hurdle that you have to overcome to get there?
I mean, honestly, I was a starting pitcher in high school, and I know that it was high school, but I am capable of going deep into games. The biggest thing that I need to focus on when I start throwing is having the starter mindset, and playing catch like a starter, having a routine, you know, kind of which days am I going to play long toss? Which days am I going to go short? Am I going to have an off day? Am I going to, you know, because you're pitching every five to six days in pro ball. So you got to play catch that way too. And you got to get in routine that's going to get your body and your arm exactly the way it needs to be for you to go and perform. And in high school, you know, you're young, you feel good all the time.
Yep.
So like, I wouldn't play long toss. I wouldn't do all those things to, you know, I wouldn't do arm maintenance stuff. Like, that's going to be the biggest thing for me, learning how to do that. And the rehab pitching coach here has already talked to me about, you know, some of that stuff. And we're going to be sitting down here in a month or so before I throw, to kind of get a program set and a routine set for me when I start throwing off a mound again. And, you know, just like I said, get a routine set in place.
Yeah, I had fun. We have kind of our minor league team, talking prospects, you know, who to rank who and where and how high and all this stuff. And one that's fascinating topic is he was out of the bullpen. How many innings can he go? And one thing that keeps coming up in our chat is, I'm like, he played shortstop every day. Why are we worried about his conditioning? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's like, it's not a question of like how many innings he can throw. That's one thing that you have going for you is the fact that you're making throws from short, constantly playing day after day. That physical conditioning really does matter as a starter, because the one thing that we've seen from prospects in the past, especially guys who are like relievers in college and then make that transition later, is that that takes a while, especially in the summer heat where a humidity is like 1,000% outside. You know, people don't understand what it's like just to be out there in it for five innings. And, you know, you've been playing in the dirt. You're running around. So you have that going for you for sure. You know, it's a little bit different throwing that much, but at the same time, it sounds like you have kind of a plan in place as to kind of get into the swing of thing, get into that routine, that starter's routine, that game planning and all that other stuff. So when you're throwing in college, again, fastball generally live mid 90s, we've seen you throw as high as 99. I don't think I've heard you throw any harder than that. If triple digits have hit, you need to tell me. But do you think that there's even more velo in the tank for you? Do you feel like that's where you want to live? Is there something with your fastball in particular that you're wanting to really refine beyond just being able to be consistent with it, obviously? Like, where do you feel, how do you feel about where that pitch is now? So again, assuming everything goes back to right where it was and where it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm stronger than I ever been. I'm faster than I've ever been. I'm more explosive than I've ever been, and got a new elbow. So
yeah, there you go.
Knows?
New toy.
Yeah. But being a starter, you can't just come chucking, you know, like a reliever does. You got one inning, two innings, and those are the guys who can really pump it up there. But, you know, what I'm trying to do is to, you know, just to sit in a comfortable range, velo wise, and kind of sit there throughout the game. Like, I'm not going to try to, you know, blow myself out, you know, in the first, second inning and not have that for the rest of the inning. So just kind of got to, that's going to be another difficult thing for me to do, is, you know, kind of maintain that velo and that mentality of not every pitch is going to be 100%. Like, you got to be able to switch up speeds and location. And, you know, before, it's like, as a reliever, you just go throw strikes, you hit spots. You might only need two pitches, but as a starter, you need, you know, three plus pitches. And, you know, I'm going to be working on more pitches. I threw a slider and changeup at Nebraska, but I don't know. I kind of have the idea in my head that I want to throw more pitches. So when I start throwing, I guess we'll figure that out.
Oh, see, I like to hear. Once people start putting four or five pitches, my brain starts churning a little bit. I did want to ask when you're before. Obviously before the workout where things weren't obviously right, but you said that sometimes your arm just felt really sore after games. Were you more sore throwing breaking pitches, or was it actually when you're trying to top out on your velo? Or was it just kind of just like sore, just kind of generally not quite right, but for a lot of different things?
Yeah. And honestly, I don't even know, like, 'cause when I was out there pitching, I mean, I wouldn't like, be like, oh my gosh, that hurts. Like I didn't feel anything.
Right.
I mean, maybe at shortstop sometimes I feel something. Those are longer, harder throws than on the mound.
Kind different of angles.
Stressful. You're not, maybe you're on your back foot in the hole and you throw a ball as hard as you can to first base to try to get the guy out. That never felt good on my arm. And I think that kind of combining those two along with an injured arm, it was just not a good recipe. So,
well, sure. I was more kind of just like thinking, like, with this new bionic elbow, I mean, like, is he gonna be pumping up like 102 easy? Like, you know, was he pitching? Did you ever get a chance to meet Casey Kallek when he was in the organization?
I did not. No.
So he was throwing mid to upper 90s, and he didn't realize that he had been throwing with a broken wrist for 2 years.
Oh my God.
And he's like, yeah, I did. I hurt myself weightlifting, but I never got a scan or anything. And then it didn't feel right. And then I went and got scanned. They're like, how have you been throwing at all? They had to do like bone grafts and all. It was a mess. And I'm like, see, I wonder how hard is this guy going to be throwing when he's actually, you know, fully put back together? Yeah. So you talked to me a little bit about this slider and this changeup that you were throwing. And the changeup for me anyway, is for a starter, especially with a fastball that can be as quality as yours, being able to pitch off that fastball with a changeup, keeping those opposite handed hitters honest. How would you grade your changeup? Again, let's assume that everything's back right to where we were. If you're putting a grade on it, where are you putting on it?
You know, I saw a lot of stuff pre-draft and I'll see stuff post-draft. I think my changeup's my best pitch.
Really? See, I like to hear that.
That's what I threw my entire life. My dad didn't let me throw a breaking ball until probably sophomore, junior year, high school. So my changeup had to be pretty good. And my oldest brother, who is a pitching coach for NAIA school in Missouri, he taught me my changeup. And I've thrown it the exact same way, like with pronation, and maybe switched up a grip just a tad here and there as I got older. But that was always my pitch that I thought was my best pitch. Didn't throw it too much because I, you know, was more of a 1 to 2 inning guy. And
right.
If I throw my slider to a guy and he's nowhere near it, I'm not going to go away from that pitch. So that's, I mean, and I, when I faced lefties, that was my go-to pitch. That was my strikeout pitch, like to a lefty. So, yeah.
Yes. That's one of the things I'm really excited to see, is kind of see what the repertoire, because again, the repertoire is just when you're a bullpen guy in college. I mean, if you're throwing mid to upper 90s, I mean, most guys don't even know what's going to happening to them in those situations a lot of times anyway, but you know, good hitters are still good hitters. You know, whatever conference you're in, but you know, you don't have to be super fancy, but once you have a changeup that can, you know, get some really ugly swings and let you play off that, it's exciting stuff. What are some thoughts? And like, again, we're just spitballing. I'm not going to pin you down. I'm not going to be calling you in 6 months saying, you know, where is this pitch? But what are some other things you're thinking about trying to put in the arsenal?
I threw a cutter at the combine and it was like 90-91, and it was
okay.
I thought it was pretty good, but I started throwing that like 2 weeks before that, so that I'm trying to bring that back, but I don't know how the, you know, the pitching coordinators and how they would feel about that. So kind of just have to go through some communications with that. But I also, my current slider is got a lot of depth to it. So I'm almost thinking I want to use that as a curveball and then a harder slider.
Yeah. Like a power breaking ball.
Yeah. So, and I guess that would kind of mix with the cutter too. So maybe one of those pitches I would add.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, like Corbin Burns, so the 96 mile an hour cutter, like that's just natural stuff for him. Like, I think a slider with some good speed would kind of imitate that
sure,
cutter a little bit. And so,
yeah, I mean, Corbin's a bit of a mutant, but you know, if you're heading in that direction, you're probably in a good spot. And I like that diplomatic answer. Like, well, we'll talk to the pitching coordinators before I start doing anything.
Yeah.
Don't want to get you in trouble. Don't worry, Braves officials. We're just talking baseball. Spencer will do as he's told. I promise he will. One last thing, Spencer, before we let everyone go. I have a feeling I already know the answer to this question. But you're pitching in college. Who's the most difficult hitter you had to face when you're at Nebraska, and what made him so hard to pitch against?
Probably the last time I pitched, I pitched against Robert Moore at Arkansas. He is a really good hitter. Not trying to do too much. It was hard to get him off balance. I remember he fouled my fastball pull side, and I'm like, oh, I got him on the changeup. And then he was on time with the changeup. And then the next at bat, I was like, all right, let's try something different. Threw him a slider, didn't swing, and then threw him another slider. And I got him on that, just hit a weak ground ball back to me. But it was like, I'm up there on the mound, like, what can I throw to this guy? Because he's on time with everything. And when you have a hitter like that who, you know, doesn't get off balance and doesn't make mistakes in the box, he's hard to throw to.
Yeah, that's gonna be a first round pick in this coming draft too. You know, maybe, who knows? Maybe he can float down to the Braves and you guys can start hashing things out in some scrimmages. That'd be some fun baseball, to be sure. That'd be a funny story. Like, hey, you know, Spencer and I talked about who was the guy that he didn't want to face. At least he doesn't have to anymore. The way that guy's playing, though, my hunch is that he might not be there when the Braves are picking. Well, thank you, Spencer. Again, I'm really thrilled to get to talk to you again. Thanks again to all of our listeners out there. We appreciate all the patience during this what has been a very painful MLB lockout experience. However, the minors still play on even without the major league, so this will be plenty of minor league stories to talk about, I'm sure, down the line once Spencer's a little further along his recovery. I'm hopeful that we can get to talk to him again. We're going to talk to other minor leaguers. We're going to be covering the minor league games just like we always do every single year. Thank you all so much to all of our listeners. Again, if you don't want to miss a single episode, just search Battery Power on whatever podcast purveyor you prefer. Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. If you search that, the changeover on the time, you might have to search Talking Chop for a little while the names change over to actually be able to find the feeds, but you'll get this podcast. You'll also get the other two shows, all the baseball content you could ever want. Thank you again so much for all the support for everyone. Thanks again to Spencer for talking to me again in some baseball, and we'll see you on the road.